I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll break down the huge brawl between Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Say it, brother. And we'll tell you if the Giants regret giving Odell all that money. But we start today like every day with a Whitlock. So what you got, big dog?
I got Jason Garrett. I got Jerry Jones. He hired the man dubbed the Princeton Clapper by my friend Michael Lombardi because Garrett looked like a taller, smarter, better version of Sean Payton. Well, now we know beyond a reasonable doubt, Jason Garrett is not the second coming of Sean Payton. The Princeton Clapper is miscast as an NFL head coach and has nothing in common with self-made men like Payton or even Cowboys owner Jerry Jones. Last night's Sunday Night Football debacle made it clear Jones needs to fire Garrett. The Cowboys tossed away a winnable road game to the Texans due to horrendous coaching. The bad coaching extends well beyond Garrett's ridiculous decision to punt on 4th-and-1 in overtime. Jones is already on the record questioning that decision. Garrett and his offensive coaching staff blew this game in regulation. The buffoonery that transpired in overtime was inevitable. With the game tied in the final 3 minutes of the fourth quarter, Dallas had the ball at their own 47 and faced 2nd-and-8. Given the trouble the Cowboys had blocking J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney all night, Garrett's staff called the worst play of the night. They had Dak Prescott drop back to pass, turn his back on the defense, fake 2 handoffs, turn around, and then look for a receiver to throw the ball to. Guess what? When Dak turned around, J.J. Watt was sitting in his lap, and the next play was 3rd-and-17. Game over. Jason Garrett is in over his head. Forgive me for this, Marcellus, but Garrett is your stereotypical prep school, Ivy League elite, fast track to a position of power because his resume says so, not his accomplishments. This is what Jerry Jones needs to realize. Jason Garrett and Sean Payton are not cut from the same cloth. Payton earned every opportunity he's ever received. He was an undersized quarterback in Eastern Illinois. He bounced around the Elite Arena League as a quarterback. He was an assistant coach at 4 different colleges and 3 different NFL franchises before being named head coach of the Saints. The Princeton Clapper has coached 2 places, 2 seasons with the Dolphins, and the rest with the Cowboys. As a player, the Cowboys signed Garrett as their free agent quarterback because his dad was in their scouting department. Garrett won 2 Super Bowl rings, grabbing coffee for Troy Aikman and carrying a clipboard. Garrett was born sliding into home plate. Payton drew a walk, stole 2nd base, reached 3rd on an infield single, and scored on a sacrifice fly. The Saints hired Payton away from Bill Parcells, Dallas's coaching staff, in 2006. When Payton led New Orleans to the Super Bowl title in February of 2010, everyone started looking for the next Sean Payton. Jerry Jones misidentified Garrett and elevated him to Dallas's interim head coach in November of 2010. The rest is mediocrity. The Cowboys have made the playoffs 2x in the last 8 seasons. It's time to stop the clapping and find a real football coach.
Woo!
Fellas, I just said a mouthful. I hope.
Man, first of all, you're not forgiven for the Ivy League shot. I mean, what are we supposed to aspire to be? Like mediocrity, as you say, average? Look, you're wrong because of 2 things I used to hear in the locker room all the time. When criticism came, when you had experiences that were unfortunate, when losing streaks were occurring, coach would say, why? And why now? I asked Jason Whitlock, why do you want to fire Jason Garrett? But more importantly, why now when you're looking at this schedule? This is a team that is 2-3, but let's look at those games. And when they have a good win in terms of beating the Detroit Lions, who have beaten the New England Patriots, and they got 2, as we like to say, good losses. When you go against the Panthers and you go against the Seahawks, you like them. Okay, I can see that. The Seahawks took the Rams, basically had that game outside of a field goal. So I say why now? When you look at Jason Garrett in terms of what he's done, he's not a mediocre coach. He's above average. There's support that says since he's been a head coach, how many losing seasons has he had? And it's interesting if you look at it, he's one of the few coaches that's only had 1, and only the Patriots and the Steelers have none. Belichick and Thomas, Tomlinson, and then you go to who? Jason Garrett. You're calling that mediocrity when I'm looking at that as a full screen that says only one time did I put out a subpar effort. Every other year, winning performances.
Here's what you're looking at. You're looking at the Patriots, the Steelers, and the Cowboys. And I would argue those three organizations have been the most consistently committed to winning at all costs.
Okay, respect.
And so it's the organizations. And in my view, Jason Garrett doesn't stack up to Bill Belichick, doesn't stack up even to Mike Tomlin.
No.
And so those organizations, I think Jerry Jones gets a bad rap as incompetent, meddlesome, blah, blah, blah. What Jerry Jones is committed. Mm-hmm. And he's going to provide you with every resource possible to be successful. I just think with Jason Garrett, you just reach a point when you look at him strategically and what edge does he provide as a head coach, and there is none. Again, he was hired because they thought, oh, we messed up. We let Sean Payton get out of here. We found the next best thing to Sean Payton, this Ivy League guy. He grew up in our organization and blah, blah, blah. And the results just don't back it up. This guy provides them no edge. Any success they've had, to me, it's been an organizational success. Jason Garrett, to me, last night wrote his eulogy. He basically gave me all the information I need to know, say, this isn't good enough. He's not good enough in the critical moments to be the head coach of this team. I can get these results with others and hopefully with someone that will make better. Jerry Jones was on record. That 4th-and-1 decision in overtime was just stupid. It's inexcusable.
But you're looking at it in a vacuum, and I know you watched the entire game, so do you remember Chris Collinsworth saying, wow, this Dallas play calling has Houston mystified. Do you remember Houston being on the goal line not knowing there was a double option reverse pass that was open to a wide open Hurns, touchdown Dak Prescott? And there were moments in that game you're like, this is genius. And there were moments in that game you're like, this is a team that is trying to make up for what they are, which is a budding team on defense, and they have an average quarterback. Like, say what we want about Dak Prescott. No, you like Dak Prescott. I respect Dak Prescott, but by the numbers, this is a guy who is averaging one touchdown, one interception, and 190 yards passing. Seriously, like, there are running backs for the Jets right now getting that in rushing, and he's going out there night in, night out, putting up mediocre numbers. No matter what you get from Ezekiel Elliott, it is difficult for this offense to continue to move the chains.
I right there with you last night in terms of Dak Prescott struggled and took some shine off himself.
Yeah.
And looking at him and the balls that Deshaun Watson was throwing and the balls that Dak was throwing, you can see the difference. However, I'm not willing to write Dak off until I see him in a properly run system that recognizes. I was never, you know, Chris Collinsworth was impressed with Dallas' offense. There was no point during that game that I was impressed with Dallas' offense. Again, their offensive line struggled, and by the time that fourth quarter arrived there was plenty of proof that, like, Clowney and Watt are a problem for our offensive
line. Everybody.
And so why in the most critical moment when I had a chance to steal a win on the road late in the game, why do I have Dak Prescott for 2 seconds with his back turned and for 2.5 seconds faking handoffs to guys? It was just stupid. And that's on Scott Linehan, the offensive coordinator. I get it. But Jason Garrett is supposed to be the offensive-minded head coach that's supposed to help them in that situation. Remember, we struggle in blocking these guys. Dak's got to get the ball out quick. We don't have time for this stuff we got in the playbook where he ain't looking at the defense and he's doing all this rigmarole in the backfield. The head coach can have that influence. And certainly, when you get to the end of the game, it is the head coach's decision on whether you punt or not. And he just had no feel for the game.
Yeah, look, you got to have a pulse in that moment, Sean McVay style. You got to go for it in that situation and live with the results. But let's reset. Jerry Jones needs to fire Jason Garrett. You took a shot at Jason Garrett. And I'm looking at other names with worse win percentages.
They don't coach for the Cowboys.
Oh, so
they don't coach for an organization that's that committed to winning.
The Cowboys are committed to winning. And under
this ain't
Jason,
the Bengals. This ain't the Bengals.
Under Jason
this is
Garrett,
the Cowboys.
Have they won under Jason Garrett despite
not enough.
A change and transition at quarterback?
Not transition, enough. Not enough. In the playoffs.
They haven't won a Super Bowl. They have not won enough in the playoffs. But that said, that doesn't mean you lose your head. That doesn't mean you lose your job. When I'm sitting there saying
Eight
I'm
years,
better than
Marcellus.
What do you expect with this roster? Who's the number one receiver? Whitlock, you, me? Who's the number one receiver? Who's the quarterback?
I expect better than what they got last night. The defense played well enough to win, and I thought there were, you know, the quarterback struggled, no question about it. But I can't put it all on the quarterback. When I just look at Jason Garrett's not setting the right tone. He doesn't have control. He's not providing. A head coach is supposed to provide you an edge,
Whitlock,
in some capacity, and he's not.
It's never been a tone conversation in football. It's a talent conversation, too. And I need my leading receiver to have more yards than my tight end. He retired. Dak Prescott retired Dez Bryant. Think about it. Dez Bryant with Tony Romo was top three in the league, maybe the best receiver, it seemed like. He retired the guy.
When you hire a head coach, I'm just telling you, Kyle Shanahan shows up in San Francisco. He provides them an edge on the offensive side of the ball. Yeah. Sean Payton, edge on the offensive side of the ball. Bill Belichick, edge on the defensive side of the football. That's what great coaches do. And when you are the Cowboys and you are just as committed to winning as the Patriots, the Steelers, and the guys at the top of this league, and you're not getting the edge from your head coach other than his clapping ability, it's time to move on. All right, let's move on to some big stories. Starting in the UFC, where there were some major fireworks this weekend with Khabib Nurmagomedov defeating Conor McGregor at UFC 229, then jumping into the crowd and attacking McGregor's coach, which sparked a melee both inside and outside the octagon. Afterward, Khabib apologized, but still has some choice words about Conor.
I want to say sorry to Athletic Commission, Nevada, sorry to Vegas. I know this is not my best side. You know, this is not my best side. You know, I'm human being, and I don't understand how people can talk about I jump on the cage. You know, what about he talk about my religion? He talk about my country. He talk about my father. He come to Brooklyn and he broke bus. He almost killed a couple people. What about this? What about this? Why people talk about I jump over the cage? Why people still talk about this? Like, I don't understand.
All right, Marcellus, who do you blame for the post-fight melee?
Starts at the top with Dana White. He enabled this culture through his promotion. I was really caught off guard sitting there at the local sports bar. Shout out to Jalapenos Pete's. And I'm sitting there with my fam and my friends. And all I kept seeing in slow motion was Conor McGregor attacking the bus and throwing the dolly in the bus. And I'm like, didn't all the commissioners get the memo like the NFL did that you can't show the violent hits, the unethical, the illegal things, and then still use it in promotion? So once you create that climate, Khabib is thinking after a win over that same guy who got a slap on the wrist by the UFC, if he got away with that, why can't I get away with hopping over this cage and octagon and going after his people? So I start with Dana White. You enabled this.
Legitimate point. But at the end of the day, I blame Conor McGregor. Mm. I blame him more than Khabib. I blame him more than Dana White. Conor McGregor, to me, has reached his expiration point. He has made a bunch of money off of a bit of a fraud and a sham to me. In terms of made a bunch of money fighting Mayweather in a fight that we knew was a sham. And so he is a fraudulent person here in terms of he set the tone for all of this. When you start talking about a man's religion, when you start talking about a man's father, again, I don't want to excuse what Khabib did, but I get it. Mm. You start talking about a man's religion, you start talking about his parents, you bring all that into it, and Conor McGregor has gotten away with this for far too long. I didn't like the promotion of Conor versus Floyd when there was all that cursing and stupidity, and they kept having all these press conferences where nobody could talk to each other like they were human beings. And I get the fight game is ugly, but I just think the whole Conor McGregor took a dump on himself over the last couple years, and this was inevitable that somebody was going to have this kind of reaction. And then in the initial reaction to the full post-fight melee, oh, my God, Conor got attacked from behind with sucker punch.
Right.
And then when you really go look at the film,
yes.
He threw the first punch. At somebody in Khabib's camp.
Yeah.
And then Khabib's camp overreacted and came into the ring and took a punch at Conor. This all falls on Conor McGregor. He, and some people before the show were upset or disagreed with this take. I think there's a lot of similarity between Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey.
Uh-huh.
Both of them frauds and overhyped.
I can't go there, but
I can go. I can
not
go all
fraud. There. That left hand overhyped. Is not a fraud. Overhyped. People have went to sleep. Champions have went to sleep with that left hand. That's not fraud.
Get it?
That's not fraudulent.
But to me, the UFC needs to move away from this. Conor McGregor has done all he can do for the UFC, and we're sitting around. Should Khabib be stripped of his title? Should he be suspended? No, it's Conor McGregor.
Well, let's say this. Khabib lost his winning moment. He had a moment where not only do you get the belt, you get the purse, you're the champ, but you also could win the PR battle. You could win all this fanfare. But instead, you took the lower road that was available to you in that moment, and it was a justified lower road. It's funny when we say we take the high road, it's not always justified to take the high road. And it's sometimes justified to take the low road, but you're still not supposed to go there. As we always learned, as we went through adolescence to adulthood, it starts in this continuum. Thoughts, words, and then actions. What trumps words? Actions. So if someone talks about my religion, my mama, my daddy, and I've heard it all playing football, you have too. Hey, bruh, there's one thing I got that's a hammer over top on top of all that. And it's these actions. I am giving you the business. You couldn't breathe a minute ago. Why do I need to go stomp out your camp? If I could beat you, I know I could beat your camp. What you doing out there?
It's not what I would have done. It's not what I would have preferred to see. But again, when this kid and his religion is under attack globally.
True.
And so I get why he lost his mind for a moment. And I'm just saying, Conor McGregor is playing in a lane where there shouldn't be, there's no games over here in this lane. Let's leave this man's religion out of it. Let's leave this man's father out of it. Conor McGregor, to me, is the bad guy. And that's what makes me, when I say he's past his expiration date, I'm not really interested in a rematch, Marcellus. Mm. I know there's a lot of hype for a rematch. Are you interested in seeing a rematch here?
No, I'm not interested as well. I mean, it's funny you say the Conor fatigue, and you know it is fatigue when he has to go to those extents just to get his marketing points across. Like before he used to just do it, he talking about you, he talking about your career, he talking about why you even talking to me. I'm sitting here in this silk robe. And then it turned into like, oh, that showed me that Khabib got to him. Like, he knew he was in for the fight of his life because he went to that degree. That said, this fight, if there was a rematch, I'm sitting there like, I don't want to see this. One, it's a setup to only see Conor win. Like, we're not sitting there for the rematch.
He ain't winning.
That's my point. So why am I going to give you 89.99? And I'm like, I'm only sitting here. What your motivation is, Conor wins. Plus, you can't sell me solely on money alone when it comes to competition. That can't be the only fuel for a competition. Oh, it's gonna break records, the gate, the pay-per-views. Okay, what about the competition? What about who's in there? What's the story? And to me, like you said, I think this one's exhausted. They gotta move on.
Well, the other thing, and I hate to go this far, but I'm going to, I think it's just dangerous. I think we saw them unleash an element, both parties, that is potentially dangerous. If I'm in the crowd at that fight, I'm not here. I'm not, y'all supposed to fight inside that octagon. Leave that fight outside the octagon. I look at these two guys and where Conor has gone, and I'm not, I don't have any trust that he won't go there again.
Right.
I've already seen Khabib's reaction when you go that far, and then that spreads like a virus. Mm. Conor's camp, Khabib's camp. They're all caught up in it. And so I literally, and this is an analogy that'll play right to you, Marcellus, I worry about this being a Biggie Tupac situation.
Mm-hmm.
And where somebody legitimately could get hurt in a real way, not a fist fight. When people's camps are involved and there's that kind of passion and everybody, Conor plays the thug role real strong.
Yeah.
And so that invites somebody to take it to an extreme that's just too dangerous. I really don't want to see a rematch.
And Jason Whitlock just turned into Jay Prince, huh? You over here saying, you know what? I'm going to stop this beat before it gets too real. I understand that. I mean, that was the whole Drake-Kanye situation. You know what? I want to go back to when you said about Ronda Rousey because the parallels go even farther. Let's talk about how Ronda Rousey, you said, was a fraud. She won. She was champion. It was a meteor.
12 fights, man. 12
fights. I give you that. but you know what's interesting? Let's talk about the marketing promotion and why I think Dana White is trying to sell us a little too hard on these type of fighters. Ronda Rousey, once she got KO'd, all of a sudden, behind the scenes, went into a no promotions deal. Y'all remember that? When all of a sudden, Ronda didn't have to set up the fights anymore. And even in this deal, It was funny that Conor McGregor told him, I want little to no promotion. And all this came with a little to no promotion deal. But what happens? You go out there and you get KO'd. You go out there and get tapped out. All of a sudden, we start to say, so what's the draw here? Because the arrow's pointing down on you in the octagon. And in terms of salesmanship, you're not doing a great job at it. You've lost kind of the thing that was gravity and the thing that drawed us in.
Once you get paid $100 million like Conor did for the Floyd fight, once you have other avenues such as Hollywood like Ronda Rousey had, you lose your passion for the game. And that's why Conor is expired. We saw a young lion in Khabib that really is about that life. Conor is about being a brand, a character, a bunch of other things that don't have anything to do with getting into that octagon and being about that business. I'm over. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings. Let's return to the NFL, where Odell Beckham Jr. is making waves again, this time with a brutally honest interview that aired Sunday morning on ESPN, where Odell called out the Giants' play calling and questioned if Eli is the right QB to lead the team. After the interview aired, the Giants actually played great, but lost a heartbreaker to the Panthers. Coach Pat Shurmur addressed Odell's comments after the game.
All right, listen, I'm going to answer all the drama questions right now, and I'm going to go back to what I said, all right? I addressed it with Odell. I addressed it with our team. I publicly declared that I didn't agree with his comments. And I asked anybody that was interested, if they wanted clarification, go to Odell, because he's a big man. And these are the kind of things, in my opinion, when you have the locker room that we have, that will help galvanize them, because the locker room took care of it. And that's all I'm saying on it. Finito. Done.
I don't regret anything that I said. If it took that for us to come together as a team like we did today, I could take that every single time. It had been on my heart, and I think all the stuff that was built up inside, it just kind of, it came out in the wrong way. And I texted him and I asked if I could have a minute just to talk to the team, because I feel like we don't, if we're not all on the same page, if it's not authentic and real, and we can all understand each other, then there's going to always be miscommunication. So to be able to do that was big for me. I was nervous to get up there, and these are your brothers you see every day, but once you're up there in front of all of them, it's a little nerve-wracking. So I'm just excited about the way we pulled together. Like I said, we came up short, but we fought today.
Drama. Huh. That's Drama King. He's a brand. It's not about football. It's not about winning. This would not be the last time Odell Beckham does something that, hey, look at me. I think the Giants are going to regret giving him this long-term contract. It's not about football to him anymore. He's made his money. It's about the Odell brand. This was right on brand.
Oh, no. Disagree there. You don't set NFL records in your short stay in the NFL if it's not about football.
Previous.
Okay, that's part of this process, which has him frustrated because his expectations are where he set that standard. So this is a guy who's heavily invested in football. And it's weird. A lot of people always push back on you when you make your money. Like, it was all about the money. I like how much money I just made. I want to make even more, so I'm even more invested in it. So I don't want to go there, Jason. I do disagree with his comments, though, because he wasn't brutally honest. Coach always said names and numbers. If you're going to call somebody out, you got to call them out. But when Josina's like, so what is the problem with the offense? And you say, I don't know. Now, that's when you lose me. You have to go there. So if it's Eli, I need to see Eli's name. If not, don't say it. Don't try to carefully manufacture it, because then it gets political and then it casts a cloud over the entire locker room.
I personally think this was great. I think this was awesome. We look at Odell, and no, I don't think the Giants will regret this, because when we look at Odell and everything that we talked about leading up to him getting the contract that he earned that, was, well, look at all the antics on the field, all the penalties after the celebrations, after he scores. We haven't seen any of that. We've seen him go out there week after week and produce to the ability that he's afforded because of the lack of quarterback play that he's getting. And to your point, Marcel, like, no, he was not brutally honest. Yep. I think he handled it correctly. Like, I'm going to tell you truth.
I reached for my Twitter off for a reason.
I'm not going to give you everything, but I'm going to give you truth.
You're going to light him up?
No, not yet, because I want to hear Tony. Because it may be all three of you, but I want to hear Tony first.
I don't have a problem with him. Are they regretting it? If they are regretting it, if they ever come to regret it, then that's their fault and they are fools, because this, you knew exactly what you were. He was a snake when you picked him up. Don't get mad when he bites you, because this is who he is. He is trying to change this year. He's trying to be quiet. He said, I kept it inside. Don't keep it inside, because if you keep it inside, it's going to come out eventually. Right. This is just who this man is. He's trying, but he's not there yet. He's trying to mature, but this is absolutely right on brand with Odell Beckham.
Tony, you did a decent job. I'm not going to hit you with the Twitter off, but you two right here.
Let's get it.
Little Wayne was sitting next to him during the interview.
Okay.
Little Wayne, what does that have to do with football?
Moolah,
you can't
baby.
Tell me this man's not a
Moolah, baby.
Thank you. That's my point.
What is your point? Your point
is not about football. He's about a brand.
Your point is optics and imaging. Like, I'm not getting caught up in who doing the interview, who's next to you and all that. It's about your performance. Odell had his best game.
When have we
in the
seen
last
this,
two
Marcellus?
Years, yesterday.
When have we seen this?
Including throwing a touchdown. And he even had one play where if Odell, this is the problem when you call people out and then you don't call people out. He had a drop. Ooh, that feels good. He had a drop. Odell, these are the moments why people don't like calling someone out. It's fear-based, because all of a sudden everything's on you. Odell can come down with that play and make that a touchdown. It's a difficult play to make. I get it. But I know some teammates of his had the eye roll then. Like, is that Eli's fault right there? Is that on the coordinator? That's on you not finishing that play. But the point is, Odell is about the game, man, and I hate what
Little Wayne, that's about the game.
Look, I don't care who's sitting next to him in the
Have
interview.
You seen that before? Did Brett Favre do that?
I don't care about
any of
that.
Did he have Kenny Chesney next to him during the interview?
What Odell was able to do when he stepped on that football field, in between those lines, did he fall short? Is he the reason why they did not win
he
that
just
game?
He dropped that touchdown.
No, he didn't drop that touchdown. The defender gets paid too now. Mm-hmm. Let's not
to a former receiver over there now.
It galvanizes the team, too. I think it does.
They called Odell out, according to Sherman.
They called Odell out, and they played. I think they looked pretty good yesterday. I don't know about you. I thought they played pretty well. And this is what it does. Even the coach said it. I've done it before where I asked for a trade in the middle of the season, and they didn't grant me my trade. So I had to go back to the locker room, told the coaches, get out. Let me talk to my teammates and tell them exactly what was on my heart and on my mind. You know, because basically I was saying, you guys aren't good enough. My career is over. I need to leave. I need to get out of here. But I'm not going anywhere, so I had to address the team. The team played better. I played better. I don't know what it did, but it did something right for us as a team and for me as a player. I went out there and had one of the best seasons I ever had.
And lit that fire.
Look what happened.
Yeah, and no regrets if you're the Giants. To Tony's point, that tiger didn't go crazy. That tiger went tiger. And that's Odell being Odell. He finally said, you know what? And we talked about this last week. The emotional makeup of a player. You have to be yourself. Whatever gets you to that third rail to play this crazy great game of football, go there, Odell. And I understand that sometimes it doesn't look great. Look, Michael Irvin used to go there. So many greats at that same position used to go there. Odell can't put a muzzle on that and didn't expect to be the same player that he was.
Did you take Tupac into the locker room with you when you spoke to the Chiefs?
I didn't.
You didn't take Tupac in?
Didn't.
How are y'all defending? Nobody wants to address the Little Wayne thing. This is about Brandy, man. This ain't about football.
So when you brought that up, I mean, I brought it up too. I'm like, what is Wayne doing? But the conversation never really went there. So I never,
he is a brand, though. I agree with you. He is a brand, though. But that's who he is. What's wrong with him? Why can't
you
be both?
TB12 is a brand? TB12
cares most about football and winning. Odell Beckham Jr. cares most about his brand.
Connor had Drake, so I guess he figured, you know.
Bring some balance this out. Stop that.
All right, to a couple of teams with no drama, the Chiefs and the Rams. Patrick Mahomes finally looked, who wrote this? Slightly human? No, he didn't. He looked great. Throwing two picks, who cares? But he in Kansas City still dominated the Jags and their vaunted defense. Meanwhile, the Rams gutted out a tough win on the road in Seattle. These are the last two undefeated teams in the league. And they're both offensive juggernauts, with the Chiefs leading the NFL in scoring and the Rams leading in total offense. The Chiefs D has been a big liability. The Chiefs defense looked great yesterday. yeah, they got a few penalties, but I still think they're the most impressive team.
Way to
in the
prep,
league.
Whitlock. Way to get in here early.
I read this.
Way to get in here early, brother.
No, no, no. I read this early, and it's crazy.
Oh, it changed.
Patrick Mahomes looked mediocre. Are you kidding me? And the Chiefs defense played its tail off. D Ford getting to the quarterback and all that. But, man, we look good. They look good. I'm sorry.
Yes, hit them with that. I love it, man. Keep it real. You know what's interesting about this team? Either team could be either, but I'm giving credit to the Rams in their 5-0 start slightly more than the Chiefs. You look at the Rams, they had a top five scoring defense before yesterday, giving up the 31, but still a top five scoring defense. Two, all the injuries. Like, they've been doing it with a mass unit. If you look at the list of people who've been hurt, hobbled, or out, Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, I hope you hurt right now. Good Lord. Cooper Kupp, Brandon Cooks, Legatron, Mark Barron just came back. Like, they're not even gelled together as a full functional unit, and they're out there smoking teams. So I give slight edge to the Rams.
I go with the Chiefs. The Chiefs are more impressive when you look at coming into this season, did we expect the Rams to be top of the NFC?
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's where they are. Coming into this season, did we expect the Kansas City Chiefs to be led by a second-year guy who's really in this rookie campaign right now to be doing what he's doing? He just threw his first two picks yesterday. And they found a way to win outside of him throwing touchdown passes. Like the Chiefs, man, when I look at them, the points that they give up, their ability to make big plays as far as creating turnovers, it all, you got to win different ways
right. Each
week. They showed that yesterday. I like the Chiefs.
Yeah, you know, this is a tough question. But I'm right now, I'm going to go with the Rams. I'm going to go. And the reason I'm going to do that is because I look at them completeness from defense to offense. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. If anybody up here is rooting for the Chiefs, it's me. I want them to be great. And yesterday, by the way, if 2 days ago, I would have said definitively it's the Rams. But yesterday, they showed me a lot. Beating that team the way they did it, because they did not play. Mahomes did not play that outstanding game. The defense forced four turnovers against Blake Bortles. Bortles, though. Mm-hmm. But after yesterday, for them to win that game in that type of way, that shows me they're a really good football team. So, but still, those Rams, they look awesome right now. They look awesome.
Remember 5-0 Chiefs? We've seen that before. You remember that year? Mm-hmm. How that turned out? I'm not blaming the organization.
When did they ever have Mahomes at quarterback?
No, they have not. And this team is insane. But if we had to start splitting hairs, Rams have more on both sides of the football, and let's not even talk about special teams.
But that's why, for me, it's not as impressive, because my expectations for the Rams has been for them to do this.
I'll give you some.
You're right. More impressive.
Impressive,
I guess.
Yeah. But which team is better?
That's a different question.
Better. I'm sorry. No, you're right.
We can settle that question, too.
Go.
Who has the better quarterback in a quarterback-driven league?
Ooh, that's tough now.
You can't put that question out there right now.
That's tough now. How is that tough?
Right now, it's Mahomes.
How is that tough?
It's Mahomes, but that ain't right.
Wait a minute.
That's like
you just
going
to throw it to Mahomes? Jared Goff now.
He's darting.
He darts.
He's darting.
Do you understand this?
He's darting.
Like, I'm talking about darts that are 40, 50-plus yards down the field.
That Vikings game. Remember those throws in the end zone? Come on, man.
Let me ask you something, Greg. You a wide receiver.
Exactly.
Let's keep it 100. Who you want to play with, Mahomes or Goff? Don't lie. Don't lie.
You can tell.
Don't lie.
I mean, honestly, because of the skill set.
Honestly?
Because of what Mahomes can do outside of the pocket.
And can touch you anywhere on the field.
I got to give the slight advantage.
Who would you rather have, Sean McVay or Andy Reid?
Exactly. Give me Sean McVay.
That's where it gets tough.
Give me Sean McVay.
Little baby Einstein over there.
Give me Sean McVay.
Where are we going? Todd Gurley or Kareem Hunt? Stop.
First of all, we got to deal with Reid versus McVay. McVay wants to be Andy Reid.
Why? That's backwards right now. That's backwards hustling. Because guess what? Sean McVay is more innovative.
Has won what?
Oh, Andy Reid has won what?
He's been to the Super Bowl. Sean McVay ain't been there.
Can he get a chance?
Man, he's only 19 years old, man. What are you talking about?
Two decades and ain't won one yet. Come on, man. This dude is 2 years old in the game.
He wants to be Andy Reid. Wants to put together a 20-year head coaching career. I've seen coaches burn bright early and disappear.
I don't want to be my hero. I want to beat my hero.
Exactly.
He's beating his hero right now. He's better at offensive play calling. Just that simple.
guard.
Look at your face.
One team is leading the league in scoring, and the other ain't. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Michael Vick. Let's move to Michael's old team, the Philadelphia Eagles, who dropped to 2-3 on the year after losing their NFC Championship game rematch to the Vikings yesterday. Even with Carson Wentz back, the Eagles haven't been able to recapture the magic of last season, with bad penalties, struggles in the red zone, and a poor secondary costing them a couple of close games. I think the Eagles' overconfidence, talked too much trash during the offseason, didn't come into this season with the right mindset. I don't think they're going to recapture the magic this year.
I don't have any faith in them this year. And a lot of people didn't have faith in them last year, including me. This was a team that felt no love through their Super Bowl run. This is a team that start wearing dog masks because we're the underdog because no one believes in us. You know why? Despite their rankings offensively and defensively, it just didn't seem like a great team. It's like they were playing greater than the sum of its parts. Respect. Hey, you won a Super Bowl championship. But now you regress to the mean. You actually are who you were last year without an overachieving Super Bowl run, including Nick Foles, who we know what that is now.
You know what it reminds me of with Carson Wentz's rookie year, his 2016 campaign, when they was trying to find an identity for the offense. And it took a couple weeks. They finished strong, but in 2017, I think they found a solution, and they started doing things that Carson Wentz liked. You've seen him checking at the line of scrimmage, calling plays from the line of scrimmage, and you've seen a more fluent offense. And then once he went down, Doug had to go back to the drawing board and find out what really worked for Nick. I think just going through that whole period in time really, you know, helped them find out what type of offense they should be. Now, 2018, it's back to Carson Wentz. Mm. Do you go back to what you was doing in 2017? And, you know, even though defenses are playing them a little different, they got more film on them, they have to find a way to make the offense flow more fluent. And I think you look at what they did with Nick Foles. It was a more vanilla type of offense.
RPO.
It wasn't too much thrown at them. And I think it made it easier for those guys to just go out and function without having to think too much about the offense and how it should move. And it just looked easier. Get back to that game plan. Find out what worked with Carson Wentz, with Nick Foles. Do it with Carson, because I think he can do it just a little bit better.
Michael, what do you think of Marcellus's point and kind of mine? I like Marcellus's underdog point. Their mentality changed. They went from the underdogs to this all offseason. Yeah. Now we're the team that talks trash on Belichick. Now we're the team that's overconfident, writing books. Everybody's a superstar.
Yeah.
I think they lost their identity.
Yeah, they lost their identity and lost touch with what reality is as far as the NFL. You're going to get everybody's best every week.
Right.
And if they don't know now they know. They played against the Minnesota Vikings defense that got to get to their credit, really good defense. You know, so I didn't expect it to be a walk in the park. I expected them to play better. But at the end of the day, just too many turnovers, too many red zone woes.
Yeah, it's like an underdog mentality. Like you said, losing touch with your identity. You come out this year getting everyone's best. Super Bowl hangover, whatever that means, still in terms of you're going to get everyone's best. But a basketball reference comes to mind for me. This team reminds me, and as they were going through the process, it's like, remember the Dallas Mavs when they won the NBA championship? And I was like, wow, where did that come from? How did this team
out of nowhere
beat the Heat? You're right. And then what happened after that? Like, they went back to where they are, which is not a team that
can't run the football neither.
Well, I'm going to say this about Dallas. They didn't even keep their players around to defend their title.
That's right.
And a lot of the players were upset about that.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. I'll go with a Whitlockism that potentially will turn into a Wiley.
Let's go.
Again, success is a waste if you can't handle it. Mm. And then a lot of people deal with failure better than they do success. And that's what I look at. I look at a team that can't handle success, and they actually deal with adversity. Remember that Philly team last year? They had all the injuries. Jason Peters, they had a bunch of adversity, and they could handle that. Success is so much harder to handle.
How about the Green Bay Packers? When they won their Super Bowl, they had 15 guys on IR. So the next year, everyone's healthy, and you're like, oh, they're going to kill
the
league.
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
It was the opposite.
It's just the opposite.
Yeah, and you take into the account that they do have more time left. I mean, it's just coming out of the first quarter of the season. And, I mean, it's only a select amount of time before they have to find a way to really make the offense go.
What's saving them?
It starts with
the
running game, though.
This division's saving them. Let's be real. They're still in it.
Yeah, it's not the strongest division, but.
No, it's the weakest.
And this adversity, though, might get them back to their true identity. Yeah. And again, because they're in the NFC East, they do have time to recover. They may make the play. Remember, the Giants used to make the playoffs as a wild card.
Every year.
And won two Super Bowls, 9-7, 10-6.
They got time.
Maybe that's what this Philly team is. All right, today we're talking about Jason Garrett, who has the Cowboys off to another mediocre start and who blew it last night with a terrible punt on 4th-and-1 in overtime. I haven't had anyone rated this. Well, I have had someone rated this low yet. Mm. I've had Jameis Winston as a dumpster fire, who I actually like Jameis Winston. But I've got Jason Garrett just at 40. He's one loss away from being at a dumpster fire level.
Oh,
job performance, a 4. Uh-huh. All-time greatness, a 4. I give him those 4 points. He's the coach of the Cowboys for 8 years.
There you go.
That makes you an all-time great. Character, I'll rate him high on character, 22.
You better.
Authenticity, he's a fraud. He's a prep school, Ivy League.
Whoa.
Softy.
Wait a minute. What's that? You went so many. Machine Gun Kelly over here with all these shots. What you talking about?
Born on third base, sliding into, born on third base, sliding into home plate.
Aren't those goals? I hope my son born on third base. He's halfway home. He better finish this and get that run. You are wrong. One.
Total of 40 here, by the way.
A total of 40. And your highest rated approval rating ever is Baker Mayfield. Okay. That
in the moment. We'll
okay.
See.
All right. We'll see. For me, it's simple. Like, I give the guy a 56. He's much better than you give him credit for. Let's talk about job performance. A win percentage that is above average. You keep talking about how he's not a great coach. He's not. But is he a good coach? Is he a coach that should keep his job despite the turnover?
The coach that punted on 4th-and-1 in overtime on the plus side of the field. One of the dumbest decisions you'll ever see.
Yeah, well, I'm going to look at his quarterback, too, and his receiver. All-time greatness. Look, you start as a Cowboy coach and you just keep staying there. That's going to give you some points. So you got 5 there. Character, super high. Ivy Leaguer, come on, man. A guy who put academics first. A real student athlete, as we say, and has had no issues. Authenticity, I understand the whole conversation of he's a puppet, a fraud. So, yeah. Hey, guys, all right. But he's keeping his locker room in order. He's keeping the Cowboys, who used to have the White House. The Cowboys, even though they won, they were losing off the field. They're not losing so much in
Jerry
the locker room.
Jerry Jones is responsible for the culture. And if anybody, if there's problems, it's on Jerry. If it's good, it's on Jerry. You know what Jason Garrett's job is?
What is it? Man, I'm not talking to you right now. The guy's job is to only have one losing season. One losing season, and you not up here calling.
His clapping is not the difference in that.
It's not his clap. This guy is actually a good coach. Look, let's be real. Jerry Jones may want to look at his son, Stephen Jones, and say, how are you doing in terms of roster construction? Why are you drafting a linebacker in 2017, 2018, when we need playmakers? Calvin Ridley was just sitting there. You pick a linebacker?
Look, if the Cowboys had a wide receiver,
it'd be something different.
They would be a totally different
team. Different game.
A whole different. That's one mistake. The rest of that roster, the DBs, the linebacking core, the defensive linemen, look real strong.
I'll give you that. There's a budding team everywhere except where you need to be in 2018. Receiver and quarterback.
Aye.